Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stomp TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. Today, I am speaking with the director of barbecue and grilling for Stomp TV, Claire Copey, brilliant sommelier. Okay. That's your new title. You'd be quiet.
I had no idea.
We're going to talk about summer is coming. Weather is great. We're going to talk about grilling and barbecue and what to pair wines with for four kind of commonly found things that you would have in your backyard on the barbecue. There's a reason for this. I have a film coming that I directed called The Whole Animal, which is a vast film about food and culture that takes place in seven countries about food as culture. I mean, this is a film that we set out to show kind of what we can learn from our past about the future of food, and yet about kind of the beauty of what we eat and the culture it comes from. So it's really a special movie about using the entire animal, and I can't wait. The premiere of this film, for you Chicagoans who are very lucky, is in Chicago at the Music Box Theater on May 26th. You can buy tickets at the link in the show notes. And if you want to book a screening, if you're a restaurant or a winery or a place where you, a venue, you want to do a screening or a dinner, you can also do that there as well. This movie is, it's very special, really, really great food film. And I'm really proud to have directed it. Claire, it's great to have you back on the podcast. I'm proud of your new title of director of barbecue and grilling for Stomp TV.
I'm really, so excited. Really, I just heard it for the first time. What an honor.
Yeah, it's really a tremendous, tremendous
job. I don't think title. I deserve it after overcooking that beautiful Flannery beef on sparklers. I don't know that I deserve that title, but I'll take it.
Well, you did something right on sparklers. So, all right. So I think this is kind of the conversation that's been ad nauseum discussed. What do you pair wine-wise with like your backyard grill, barbecue things?
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, I don't mean to be a jerk here, but I think a lot of the articles that do it are lazy. They just sort of come up with the same stuff every time. And it's like,
yeah,
Cabernet goes great with a steak, and,
it does.
You know, or they go like, oh, you should try a tenat, you know, with
they just go really
thing.
Off the rails.
Yeah. They just go off the rails, which is, you know, oftentimes a very similar type of a wine. So, you know, hopefully we can take it a little further than your standard article or whatever in this conversation. And I want to start with your most common backyard grilling situation, whether you're rich or poor, is the burger.
Ah, yes, the burger. Classic.
Yes, the classic burger. So let's establish some rules as far as what's on this burger, because that I think is, you know.
It's huge.
It's huge. Why is it huge?
Well, it's going to dictate the wine completely. If you have, I mean, first of all, if you're throwing on something classic like a tomato, tomatoes are high acid, so you need something to stand up to that. But if, you know, we're making some really fancy, snazzy burgers with some rich ingredients on it, that's going to dictate the wine pairing as well, Jason.
And so we'll basically say that this is beef, right? We're going to say it's beef and
let's
not like
beef.
A lamb burger, not something out of the ordinary.
Not a lamb burger. It could be beef or bison, though, because those have kind of...
All right. So, but it is...
Sorry.
Let's not overcomplicate
like, oh, God.
Well, I mean, you know, it's this is the thing with wine pairings and food is that, you know, it's a wormhole every single direction. But I'm in the backyard. I've got my burger. Let's call it good quality. Let's say that I'm going to put some cheese on it. Stop me if you disagree. I'm going to put lettuce on it. I'm going to put ketchup on it.
Okay.
I'm going to put mustard on it. Now, I myself, being from Cleveland, I'm a brown mustard guy, stadium mustard type of thing.
I'm not mad at that.
Okay. All right. It's pretty, you know, not too out of the ordinary.
No,
and then
you're not going crazy.
How do you feel about mayonnaise on a burger? Are we going to nix this idea?
I would say for our purposes, right? I mean, like, it's good, of course. It's fat. It's delicious. But I would say for the purposes of our classic burger right now that that you're building, I say, let's say no mayo.
Okay. Am I allowed to put mushrooms on it or anything like that?
Well, I think we should pair with the classic burger first.
Okay.
You know?
Got it. Okay.
Your standard American burger.
Okay, got it. What are the biggest impediments with this burger, Claire? From a standpoint of I'm looking at the thing that's the biggest hang up. Now, obviously, we all know almost any wine, top to bottom, any color, you know, if you're outside with your friends and you have a burger, it's going to be great. So let's, you know, try to put the pretension aside for 1 second. But there are those kind of like friction point pairings that are perfect. And so let's try to hit that. What's the biggest impediment? I didn't say tomatoes, so I want tomatoes on my burger. You're going to say that's okay, right?
Let's throw a tomato on there.
All right. So what's the biggest impediment from just taking any wine for this hamburger?
Biggest impediment. Well, honestly, it's such an approachable thing, the burger, which is why it's so popular. It pleases so many people and so many palates that I wouldn't even say there's an impediment, but you do have a lot of things going on. Like I mentioned, the acid in the tomato. You've got fat in the cheese, fat in the meat. So you want enough structure in this wine to be able to stand up to all those components. But again, it's a burger is an unpretentious thing. So you don't want anything that's, I think, too cerebral. I don't think you want anything that's too high in structure that completely obliterates all the flavors of the burger. So yeah, not impediments, but just little things to consider. So I would say as far as pairing, you want something equally pleasant and non-cerebral, approachable, and fresh. You know, it's probably a hot day when you're cooking up those burgers on the grill. So you want something that's going to refresh your palate. And
look, what you just said is actually like my biggest thing with all of this food. The biggest problem with your outdoor cooking stuff is that the biggest problem is that you're generally out in the sun, you know, and it's generally warm. And so it's like, A, that pretty much knocks off having a lot of white and rosé wines because they just get hot in your glass, in your hand quick. But the other problem is, do you really want like a big high alcohol red in the sun?
Absolutely not. No.
It's tough, right? I mean, it's a tough hang, especially if you're going to have two glasses.
That's why people generally go for beer with the burger, right? But we're playing devil's advocate and saying there are some good wine options as well.
All right. Let's start with you.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. So you want me to go?
Let's do it. I say you should go. Okay. I always go first. You go first.
All right. Fair. This is going to sound, I know that there's a lot of people out here that are going to disagree with me. But I think that an inexpensive, and I mean inexpensive. I'm not talking like those of you who listen to the podcast know my feelings on Beaujolais Nouveau, and I won't go there again. I still get messages nonstop about people who are like, it's a good wine. And I'm like, okay, I get it.
Do you really?
A day ago. Okay. But I would say Gamay. And I mean like from something that's a little bigger, usually the inexpensive Gamays. Ones you can probably find in your grocery store are not the lightest things. They have some body to them.
Yeah.
And the ones that you can find from, you know, Cru Beaujolais, Fleury type stuff, those are lighter.
Yeah.
So I'm talking about you're like, this bottle costs you $12. Mm. You know, you can put some chill on it. You put it in the fridge. It's going to taste twice as good as it would if it wasn't cool. My opinion. It's my opinion.
This is
what I would pair with a burger is a cool, inexpensive Beaujolais. That is what – not Nouveau because that tastes like banana and bubblegum nonsense. And it would not go well with this. But a regular
– regular not bullshit. Gamay.
Beaujolais. I mean you can get a Beaujolais for – depending on where you live in the country or where you live in Europe. You know, this could be a $12 bottle of wine. Really simple.
Absolutely. You can get a bottle of, you know, like Beaujolais Village at Trader Joe's that's going to be decent with your burger.
That's exactly what I'm talking
about. Super approachable, right?
Beaujolais Village. Go put it in the fridge so it's cold when it hits your glass. Still red, cool enough for the backyard. All right, what do you got?
Well, that's funny that you said that. That was actually something that I was toying with for that pairing as well, because that's also a great, you know, like hot dog pairing. That's kind of a, again, non-pretentious, great pairing with these easy barbecue foods. And I went in a similar direction, but different, because I went down to Italy, to northern Italy, Lambrusco. This is a wine that gets a lot of crap because there's a lot of crappy Lambrusco, just like there's some crappy Beaujolais Nouveau out there, right?
So you're like a glass of Riuniti is what you're talking about here?
Absolutely. Just get the sweeter and more sticky and cloying and flabby it is, the better. Thinking of maybe a drier Lambrusco, a lot of very approachable, cost-effective producers of Lambrusco like Saeti is a really very cost-effective Lambrusco. They can get a little expensive, but this is a dry.
Well, but I mean, what's an expensive Lambrusco? $30?
$26? Under $30, but still, I mean, nobody's spending $30 on a bottle of Lambrusco because it's got this stigma around it, unfortunately. Whereas it's very refreshing. This is what they drink, you know, in the Emilia-Romagna on a hot summer day. Easy drinking, fresh. You've got the effervescence, which is always great. And I think it's just going to serve the acidity in it. It's going to serve the acidity in the tomato and the other ingredients. I think that crisp effervescence is going to be great with that bite of the lettuce, but it's going to cut through all the fat and protein of the meat and the fat and the cheese. I think it's just going to be really bitchin'.
That's great. I will say that from a Lambrusco standpoint, I actually have not really had bad Lambrusco. I was introduced to it many, I don't know, 15 years ago. Well, it's just been a lot, really, truly, because it's not like it's a – I miss the days of like Reuniti and these things that were really in the grocery stores and all that stuff. I was too young. And then when I got into wine, being from the Midwest, I basically was making some. And so people poured really good Lambrusco for me. I mean, you know, that's Lambrusco great. Is such a, it's such an interesting thing that like it goes across all colors of wine. And, you know, sometimes it's so dark that it stains your teeth forever and ever.
It's pretty cool.
It's really good. And it's really dry and tannic and has a, that's, I think that's a really good call is Lambrusco. I don't know where the general, you know, the general wine shop, if you can actually find Lambrusco on a shelf, but.
Oh, sure. I've seen it at like, I go to K&L a lot here in Hollywood.
But you live in Los Angeles. So like, yeah, I know. Of course. But if you lived in St. Louis, yeah, there's probably, yeah, there's places you could get it.
Sure, you can find it. Ask your local wine shop. Do you want to like make this a fancy burger now and see what we do with the fancy burger or?
Well, the only thing for me that I would add to this burger, which I love is I am obsessed with jalapenos or something spicy and I love the pickled version, but I like fresh, really thinly sliced, like, and if you can throw those in a pan and saute them, I'm really big on that. So you add the spice.
Now what are you gonna do?
That's what I would add. That would be my big thing. I would add spice to it.
That's going to change. What would you pair it with now?
Well, I mean, in that case, who gives a shit? Because you can't taste anything.
Let's go.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, I think to be honest, it still stands with the Beaujolais. You just have to like, you have to say, okay, it takes a step back. I mean, otherwise you are literally drinking some monstrous red or something I wouldn't want to drink because then you're trying to compete with the burger and don't do that.
Yeah.
Just drink your $12 bottle of Beaujolais that's chilled and be chill about it is what I would do. Personally.
Or you could do a Lambrusco with some residual sugar.
Now, Lambrusco counteract that heat. Probably better. Yeah, it's a really good call. Acidic and sweet. That would work really well. What would you do? What's your fancy burger?
Oh, my fancy burger. So I was thinking there's a place out here called Stout. And when I would get off bartending in Hollywood and I would start drinking, I'd want something to counteract that alcohol. And I'd get the very, very healthy Truffle Shuffle Burger, which was just dripping in fat. It was, you know, sauteed mushrooms, a ton of Swiss cheese, just like dripping down the sides and like a truffle aioli or something that they smeared on it. And it was awesome.
Most people, they get a glass of water to counteract alcohol. You get a gigantic burger dripping.
Well, when you're drunk, that burger, that she gonna save you. So with that, now you're introducing a very, savory element with the truffle in there, right? And you want something that has these wonderful aromatics and savory notes on the nose, but you don't want anything too heavy because truffle on the palate is kind of delicate. So if I was doing a white wine, I would do something. I love Timorosso, especially Walter Massa, who basically brought this varietal back from the brink of extinction in Italy and makes several wonderful single vineyard bottlings of Timorosso. It's fragrant and a little floral on the nose, but it's really pretty on the palate. So I think that would be great. Or if we're doing truffle, like we can lean into Nebbiolo here a little bit because Nebbiolo and truffle are famous pairings. But an approachable Nebbiolo, we don't need to be drinking a Barolo or Barbaresco with this burger. That would be ridiculous. So just like a Longhe Nebbiolo would be kind of fun.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you can get Nebbiolo from Northern Italy, especially like some pretty high acid ones from the real north where it doesn't ripen all the way. That would be stupendous with something like that. I mean, really, truly. And not that expensive, honestly.
No.
I mean,
it's not too heavy. You've got a heavy ass burger. You don't need a heavy wine, but it'll stand up to it. Oh yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Let's move into, I want sausage at this, we call it a barbecue, but that's not a barbecue. That's just grilling. So
like the barbecue. Yeah. Sausage. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so sausages. So from a sausage standpoint, let me say this. I had my sausage mind open when I traveled multiple times to Alsace and Northern Italy and Alto Adige. And the wines there, it's almost like what's comes first, the chicken or the egg when it comes to the wines of these regions. Because, you know, the sausage, let's just pick something anybody in the world could get. I'm not going to get some fancy stuff that you wonderful foodies could pick out, you know, some fennel, you know, Moroccan thing. Let's just go with like just your hot Italian sausage. You know, you live anywhere in the United States or probably anywhere in Europe, you can get something similar to this. Let's take the hot Italian sausage. So with that, I'm telling you right now, there is almost nothing as good as a dry or even a little bit of residual sugar Riesling or Gewürztraminer with sausage. Mm. And people
I agree.
No, it's truly, it's a magical pairing. And people, a lot of people don't love Gewürztraminer. And I should do a little plug. We have a thing coming about Gewürztraminer and its origins and everything coming to SOM TV very soon. But I think it's because it's floral, right?
It's a grape that doesn't pull any punches. I personally like it in the right setting. I appreciate that wine for what it is. And when you have like a beautiful Gewürztraminer, you can't argue that's just a stunning wine. Like it's amazing. But I need it with food. So I love that you said that with these sausages, because my mother's German. I grew up like on Christmas Eve, we get these like veal pork sausages that I'm in love with. And we've literally had to hunt down like all the German delis around us are closing. So we have to keep going further and further abroad to get these sausages. They're special. And also having been to Alsace, when you have that with, I put down a Riesling and Gewürztraminer from Alsace with these because
this is great. Okay.
It's a beautiful example of what grows together, goes together. It's a shining example of it. It's all of the, because those sausages are so rich. They're a little smoky. And then you get this, if you have the Riesling with residual sugar, the texture is just playing with the sausage so nicely. And it's so good. It's just so good. And the Gewürztraminer too. I literally put both of those down. So that's why I laughed when you said that, because I said the same thing.
You know, it's kind of cliche for us to have picked these two wines. It's probably on these same lists of what I called out.
It does a
disservice.
But it
does work. It does
work.
To not
say that. Yeah, it works. Why would you, why fight what works? You know, it's great. With the Italian sausage though, I will say, my family grew up, I was very lucky. We had a small butcher nearby, which, warmed my heart watching the whole animal. I got a little sneak peek. Very lucky about that. And I love how much it champions the small family butcher, because it used to be such a thing. And I got very lucky growing up because we had Poetas and we had the Poeta family, and like, they still know me, and now they know my niece and nephew, and it's a family. They're part of the family, right?
Yeah.
And you get such good meat, and they can guide you on how to cook certain cuts. But anyway, we would get their Italian sausage that they made in-house, and it's like, I can't have anything else in my life. I got spoiled rotten by this. And I remember my father grilling it up every summer, all summer. And then he'd open a bottle of really approachable Chianti, like, you know, Nipizzano or something. And you have that with your Italian sausage, and life's good.
Life's really good. Yeah. That's actually one of the great things about being from, I mean, you're from Chicago, which takes, you know, I would say takes the proverbial Oscar for being like the great place for that kind of stuff, you know,
one of them,
Italian beef and all the sausages and all that stuff. But I would say, you know, being from the Midwest, I was lucky to grow up with that kind of culture. And that is a big thing about the whole animal that is important. But
very important.
We were filming the whole animal, and I was in a town called Limoges, which is a kind of like a working man's place, very historic place. Mm-hmm. And I had sausages that were very fresh, and I'm talking like just made. And it was a transcendental experience. They were the best sausages I've ever had. They were truly incredible. And the wine they poured at the table out of what I would, you know, they were just like little glass cups. They were not like wine glasses.
Yeah, no.
But it was a inexpensive, very high acid Chenin Blanc from the Loire. This was like, they went to the grocery store and bought a white wine. They're like, here's a glass of white wine with your lunch. And so they poured this, and it was, I can't imagine that this wine was more than 5 or 6 euros. So as the alternative to the Gewürztraminer and Riesling, this couldn't have been better. And the acid in this was the star, because it cut right through, you know, the fat. And these were, again, very fresh. You know, there's a lot of sausages in Europe you have that you have to, if you don't buy them by like 11 a.m., they're gone, you know, meaning like they have to be cooked right away because they were just made and the whole deal. These were these kind of things. And boy, oh boy, did the Chenin worked really well. And it was sort of like what they often do in this area of, you know, Limoges, which is.
That sounds delicious.
It was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. So that's my one alternative. Let's start going into the thing where there's, because sausages are sausages. As long as you don't put mustard on them or anything like that, they are a piece. They're a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Ribs are different. So now, if we're going to talk about ribs, I think we have to, you got to talk about sauce. And I'm thinking like your traditional baby back ribs here. Does that sound okay? Like pork ribs?
Okay. Absolutely. Like with a sweet, slightly smoky barbecue sauce kind of a deal?
I often think about, not because I'm a felon or a criminal, but what would my death row meal be? And I like, you know, that like Carolina barbecue sauce that is made out of like, you know, it's like basically all like cider vinegar and red pepper flakes and salt. There's really nothing else. There's not much to it. And it kind of does this amazing thing on its own that we're talking about the wine with the acid cutting through the fat and doing all this stuff. I think the Carolina barbecue ribs potentially could be on my death row meal. I don't know what it is. I just love. So that's if we're talking about the like the sauce, I would choose that. But we can definitely do like a sweeter sauce if that's something you want to.
This is again like the burger. It's what set are you choosing for this? You know, or is it a dry rub? So many options.
Yeah, I'm going to go with vinegar. The reason I'm also picking this is because it's also kind of challenging. You know, you have the vinegar really does. I mean, it speaks its own language to some extent, and so you
it's
have
like
to find
sauce.
Something that. Yeah, it
it's
is,
hard.
But from a
that's
different
hard to
angle.
Pair with.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it's got chili flakes in it. So okay, what ribs do you have on yours? Are you gonna?
I chose a couple because I had a feeling that you were going to throw me for a loop with different sauces. So yeah, for the more vinegar based, kind of hotter, you know, bringing a little more heat to the table, I actually chose this wine that I used to sell at Sushi Note, and I actually saw on the list at Mirabelle as well, because it's so delicious, and it's a pet net. And I don't normally go towards pet nets.
You hipster.
I know.
Although
I
like pet nets. I mean, I don't know why.
It depends, right?
Yeah.
This is from the Loire Valley. It's a producer called Domaine de Poitiers. And it's called Eclipse. It's 100% Gamay. And it's got some residual sugar on it. So just
and it's
like
only
we were
available
talking.
In when the moon is full in one county of Pennsylvania along a rock wall where one rock just doesn't fit. In Buxton County. No,
it only appears when you're fertile.
Thankfully, I'm very fertile. So I'm
all
ready.
The time.
All right. So can anybody actually get this wine, or are you just being a hipster?
Yeah.
Son?
Yes, you can find this wine. But also, you can find a pet nat with that little bit of residual sugar on it. This is a rosé, so it has that wonderful texture, can stand up to the protein a little bit more, but has that little bit of residual sugar as well, so that you're not getting overwhelmed by the heat and you're not, you know, drinking something higher alcohol that's going to be making this even hotter for you. And it really is just this beautiful kiss of residual sugar. Because I don't like anything cloyingly sweet, but it's just so dang fresh. And I thought that'd be kind of fun. You don't know.
I think that works. I mean, that sounds great to me. It really does. No joke. It really would be great. I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. You're really leaning towards things with a little bit of bubbles so far.
That's honestly it for the rest of my list for meats. But yeah.
Your next one's champagne. And then
I tried not to do champagne this one time.
That's good. I like that. That's good. I think it works. Honestly, I do. My only question is if you have like, you know, a sticky sweet sauce, does it just completely eat that alive? You know?
Does the wine eat it alive or does the sauce eat the wine
No,
alive?
Does the sauce eat it alive?
I think there's enough acidity that, but I guess we'll have to drink and eat it and find out.
I'm going to have to walk through the woods when I am fertile and find this wine.
I was like, yeah. What? Only when you're floral.
Have you ever had like those like reds from Provence, like Chateau Simon and like, okay.
Yeah.
What would you call those wines? Because that's an expensive wine. But at the same time, it's like a blend that's not, it's not a Languedoc blend.
Mm-mm.
It's a lot of the same kind of things like Mourvèdre and these.
Yeah.
But whatever, that's what I would pair with these ribs. So that's
Southern
what I would
French.
Take. Southern French. I mean, you could do Languedoc, you could do any of that stuff, but like.
For sure.
It's like a Southern Rhone blend, but often not as high alcohol for one.
Not as high alcohol and really
more
great structure on these things. Yeah.
And though Chateau Simon is an expensive wine, many are not. So like most of the red blends you can get from Provence and from the Languedoc are criminally underpriced. I mean, frankly, criminally. And I'm a huge fan of putting these wines in the fridge for a hot minute and getting them a little cooler, not like white wine cold, but kind of, you know, middle ground. And then
cellar
have that with cellar type. And have those with, you know, like the Carolina barbecue ribs that I just mentioned would be it'll work. I do think the wine can hold up to the chili flakes. It can hold up to the extreme, you know, vinegar. I mean, eventually your whole mouth will fall apart.
Yeah.
Like, and it won't matter if you're drinking Mountain Dew, but at the same time,
I
do think that this is where I would definitely start, would be with these like Southern France reds, which again, no joke, you can get a lot of these wines for 10 to 20 bucks a bottle.
Stupidly low
and really good with a little chill. I know that a lot of people like are saying to chill red wines. I'm an evangelist. Put a chill on your red wines. It's way better. A lot of these wines taste a hell of a lot better.
Absolutely. And usually when they're room temperature, that's still too hot anyway. You want them to be cellar temperature. If you're in a good restaurant, your red wine should not be the same temperature as the room. It needs to be just a kiss colder. Oh, it makes a difference. You're absolutely right with that. And I think that would be great with the ribs. I think those wines, like you said, are just, they are such beautiful quality wines for really low prices. I almost don't want to tell people about them because I have a feeling in the next 20 years or so, people are going to start paying attention to Southern France a little bit more. The prices might go up.
You know, the Napa used to be this place. It's not anymore. I'm sorry. Napa's off the rails. It's absolutely out of control. Like Napa used to be this place where you could be like, Napa would compare itself to France and be like, we're like Bordeaux. It's like Bordeaux style this, and it's good. It's like Bordeaux, you know, but cheaper. And now you look at Napa and you're like, what the hell is this compared to? I don't understand.
I know.
I'm losing my religion with you, Napa. I need you to come back to me because I've championed you for many, many, many years. Now I'm moving towards Southern France, which is inexpensive, really approachable.
Really good.
And on top of it, you know, damn good for backyard barbecue stuff. It's just great. Friggin' wine. Here. Put it in the ice bucket with the beers and open it that way.
Sounds good to me.
I guess, you know, we're going to get to the steak here. And steak is both the most under and overthought pairing, I think, ever. And before we do it, I just want to say that I spoke with Dalyn Proctor when I was making someone right before the premiere. Dalyn, we took some really aged steaks. So they were like very aged, like 50 day, 60 day, you know, somewhere in that kind of range.
Yeah.
From Flannery, who happens to be a big part of Whole Animal and was in Sparklers as well. And arguably one of the great butchers of the United States. And, but he grilled me a steak and he poured some very old Chardonnay. So it was a 17 or 18 year old Chateau Montelena Chardonnay.
Wow.
And speaking of me dissing Napa, I will say this wine it had a lot of age. It was, you know, it had the color. It was, it lost a lot of its, you know, its fruit was going away. And yet with this aged steak, it changed my whole perspective of what you can do. And I have to give shout outs to Dalyn Proctor for this because it changed my entire opinion of what you can pair with a steak. And I've never looked at it the same ever again. It's almost like, you know, I just giving this little intro here. Everybody just goes to Cabernet or sometimes Malbec or sometimes Merlot or Bordeaux or, you know, any one of these things, which are tremendously great with steak, by the way. I mean,
there's a reason they go to that. It works. You know?
Yeah. We filmed in Argentina for Whole Animal quite a bit. And, you know, Malbec and things like that are king down there with their incredible meats. But if you close your eyes and you have a bigger bodied white wine, and you have that with a steak. I'm just saying this to preface that my answer for this is not going to be a red wine. Okay. It's not going to be an old Chardonnay either, but just wanted to preface that steak requires a mind opening situation, in my opinion, especially if the steak is aged.
Okay. Oh yeah.
So Claire, we're talking, let's call it like a New York steak. Mm. Let's call it a really high quality. So this is like date night, anniversary, you know, something important kind of steak, but it's not like, it's not, you know, 40th birthday steak, 50th birthday steak. It's not like you got your dream job steak, but it's an event. Does that sound fair?
That sounds nice. Lovely.
Okay.
Let's do it. Where are we going?
Okay. All right. So what are you thinking with this steak?
And this is not dry aged, correct?
I would say it's dry aged.
It is dry aged.
But not like, you know. Yeah. I mean, where do you go with a high quality?
Yeah. This is tough because there are some more obvious choices that I think work so well with this. That being an aged Brunello, that's one of those. You know, an older Biondi Santi would be fantastic. I feel like I'm leaning super.
So Claire just leans right into a $400 bottle of wine.
Well, we're, you know. You have a dry
Have you ever
steak.
Had a latosh with steak? It's wonderful, you know?
All right. There are lots of producers who can get an older...
Biondi Santi's an expensive-ass bottle of wine.
What are you talking about? No, I know. Something like an aged Brunello doesn't have to be that crazy. Something else that I've had with steak before that's really good is like an Amarone, an older Amarone. Specifically, the producer I'm thinking of is Quintarelli. Those are just phenomenal wines. Also,
I guess it
not
is a celebration.
Cheap,
I guess it is a celebration.
You said it's a celebration. I'm treating myself.
Fine.
And, you know, there are those beautiful Napa cabs, certain producers, you know, like Heights and Mayacamas that make some cabs that are just beautifully balanced. They're not these huge oak alcohol bombs. They have finesse and they have grace and elegance, and I think they're beautiful with a piece of meat like that. I didn't say I was going to bring in champagne, but as you brought up the older Chardonnay, I will say I remember while working at Republique, my wine director Sam Rethmeyer was like, get ready to try something really bitchin', and he brought us, it wasn't steak, but it was short rib, and he gave it to us with, God, I can't remember what champagne now. I want to say it was one of the ones on our by the glass list, like Gonet or, yeah, I want to say it was Gonet. But it was mind-blowing with that meat. Absolutely mind-blowing. I think champagne and steak are beautiful pairings. And I have many times, like if I do go to a dinner where I'm ordering a ton of different things and I'm just sharing a bottle with one person, I will get a bottle of champagne because it'll run the gamut and it will still stand up to the steak with all that acidity. So I guess my red options are a little obvious and pricey, but
no,
I think that's a really cool idea. I'd love to try an older Chardonnay with a piece of meat.
Well, I think that the idea of, look, a Zinfandel or something with steak works. It works for a lot of reasons.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean.
I was going to say Ridge too. Yeah, I wrote down the Ridge.
So I have a Ridge.
Yeah.
So Ridge is an interesting one because they, I mean, if you've never heard of Ridge Vineyards, I don't know where, you know, you live under a rock and you'll
and
be delighted
okay.
to find this wonderful one.
Get out of that rock.
It's incredible. But, you know, they range from, you know, very expensive,
yeah.
which, you know, very expensive. Montebello is now a very hard to get pricey wine. And they've earned this reputation. It's tremendous. I mean, we've documented the entire existence of Ridge on Somme TV, you know, in the Two Verticals episodes and the Harvest and all this stuff. They are pioneers. You don't need to know that history with the great wineries though. You really do not. You don't need to understand that they basically are one of the more pioneering wineries in all of America, let alone California. They're part of the Judgment of Paris. You don't need to know that stuff because if they're any good, their wine stands on its own. And I'll tell you,
Absolutely.
Ridge is the kind of wine that does that. And then they would also have ones you can afford. So
yeah.
I'm going to go with a weird one here. So yeah, it's a weird one. So Ridge makes a Roussanne.
Oh yeah, okay. they do.
And it's from Adelaida Vineyard. And it's a pretty affordable wine, to be honest with you, in regards to the really serious premium world of wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, this is a wine that is not, you don't have a lot of acid in Roussanne. It's a fatter wine, it's a bigger wine. But when you pair it with the nuttiness of a slightly aged steak, it does something that's kind of magical, you know, and especially if it's cold enough, you know, what I find if Roussanne is too warm, it's too much. Like it's bombastic.
Like
it's too flabby and big, but if it's got chill on it and it's cold, I feel like I'm like the guy that's like, all your wine should be really cold. But as long as it's, which I guess I am on this pod, I don't know why. It's just a weird
platform. It's a barbecue.
But this particular wine, if you were to pour a Roussanne with like a nutty steak, it's got this characteristic where it kind of, they match each other so well. It's kind of like, you know, an actor dating an actor and you're like, that'll never work. They'll fight. But yet sometimes you get Jeff Bridges, you know, and his wife. I mean, I think this, this
Paul
works.
Newman.
Yeah. You got Paul Newman. Yeah, that's right. Paul Newman's a perfect example. This is kind of Paul Newman. So if you take like their Roussanne and you pair it with a steak, you got to close your eyes because if you're sitting there with a steak at the table with a white wine, you'll have a lot of like, you know, bro-y dudes at the bar drinking their Malbec judging you. And
oh no,
you know, screw those guys. Screw those guys, because I will tell you this wine does very well. And if you don't want to do that, then do their Chardonnay, which is like a $45 bottle of wine, which is
and also very good.
Much less than the Biondi Santi that you recommended.
Whatever. Let me live my life.
Well, I love it. I love it. I just we all just wish we could make what you make.
I don't.
Director of barbecue and grilling. I think that this is my opportunity to tell people that it's really important to look outside of what you expect mm-hmm. when it comes to the traditional pairings. And a lot of the gigantic zins and the big wines that people think go with steak, you only think they go well because you think they do. They don't actually go well with steak. You've been told. Now, there are people like Ridge who make restrained Zinfandels that are delicious and balanced, and those work really well.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not going to name any names, but there are several zins that you can get, and they're very affordable, but they would be better with our ribs than they would be with the steak.
Sure. Absolutely. Because, you know, I agree with that.
You're not putting a lot of stuff on a steak. Steak is a steak.
You shouldn't be.
You shouldn't.
If we're talking this beautiful, you know, dry aged piece of meat, you know, like a piece of Flannery meat in general, please don't douse it with a bunch of fucking A1. Don't do it.
If it's a lower quality steak, though, you know,
do what you got.
Bob's your uncle. Have fun. I think. Bob's your uncle. I think that's okay. I want to continue the conversation of pairing food and wine. I think it's one of the more fascinating, beautiful. Mm. Alchemies of why I love being in this world, in that every time you think you know something, you are proven wrong tenfold. And absolutely. Every time you think you were right in the past, you evolve and you think, I just don't look at it the same as I used to. And it's kind of a great metaphor for aging and life and all that stuff. So
absolutely. You become more creative. Yeah. There have been certainly times where I thought that, you know, working in a restaurant, I'm like, oh, this wine's going to be great with this. And then you try it and you're like, yeah, that's fine. And then you're like, let's be wacky. Let's pull out something really weird and try it. And sometimes it works and you're just like, shit, that shouldn't work. But
well, there's a lot damn of, I think if cheese, that isn't good. Cheese and wine and chocolate and wine are these things that you just think it just goes together. And honestly, it's like nine times out of ten, it's an atrocious pairing.
No.
And sometimes you get a pairing where it almost cancels out one or the other. Like you almost can't taste the wine or you can't taste the food and you think it's a good pairing because it evens. And really, that's not true. No. So from my experience, that's why I'm recommending something like a Roussanne, which I fully expect, blowback on my social media. People are going to be like, how, you know, I don't know who.
First of all, screw that again.
How could you?
But also like, don't knock it until you try it. Like I've never tried a Roussanne with an aged steak or a steak at all, to be honest. And a lot of times there aren't a lot of people that just make straight Roussanne either. Usually you see it blended. So that's special in its own from Ridge. But I've never tried that, but I want to try it. Why wouldn't you want to try these really cool things? We've all had cabin steak before. Yeah, sure. It works. Let's try Roussanne steak. Think outside the box.
Oh, it's great.
I'm excited. I want to try it.
Oh, it's great. It's great. So until our next time, which, you know, I hope you get back in the lab and keep working on your food and wine pairings.
Oh, I'm in the lab often, punching those numbers. Yes.
That's true. That's really great. I want to tell everybody the whole animal is coming. So if you are somebody who appreciates the link between story and food and people and culture, you're gonna love this movie. We worked very hard for many years on it, and like a good winery, that shouldn't matter. The movie's good on its own right. So I hope you all enjoy it.
It's very, very good.
If you are in Chicago, you are in for a treat. The premiere is May 26th, and in the show notes, you can get tickets for that. If you would like to hold a screening, and you are a winery or a location or a venue or a restaurant, dinners, all of that stuff, you can also book a screening there too. Don't forget, Cup of Salvation, our fourth Somme film, our film with The Judgment of Paris, our film about the ghost wineries of Napa, starring our very own Claire Copey, is also coming later this year. So there's tons of stuff on Somme TV, and that's not even touching the surface. SommeTV.com. It's $49.99 for an entire year worldwide. We hope to watch with you. Thank you so much.